Welcome to this ICIS Chemicals podcast. I'm Will Beecham, ICIS Chemical Business Deputy Editor. I'm joined today by our regular team of commentators, Paul Hodges, Chairman of New Normal Consulting, Nigel Davis, our Insight Editor, and John Richardson, who's a Senior Consultant in Asia for ICIS. Well, this week, we need to pay attention to China's big planning meeting for the next 15 years, which takes place Monday to Thursday. I think the so-called fifth plenum is important for the global chemical industry for three reasons. Could see a big push on low carbon technology and recycling as the country aims for net zero by 2060. There could be moves to increase China's self-sufficiency in chemicals. And the Belt and Road Initiative could be accelerated, which is leading to the creation of a major trading zone separate to the existing globalized trading system. I'd like to start with you, John. Do you think I've picked out the most important elements to impact chemicals, or are there others to add?
Absolutely. I think in terms of the green agenda, they're facing this middle-income trap because of a rapidly aging population. So they need to go into higher value industries. So that includes, you know, dominating global renewable energy, dominating electric vehicles, potentially putting a lot of money into plastic recycling, moves them on the value chain in terms of higher value jobs to compensate for higher wages. It also is a big geopolitical push because the US is going in the opposite direction. It's pulling in more allies into its zone of influence by saying, look, we agree that human activity is behind climate change. They have the ability then to develop technologies with massive state support to export those technologies, which is a real challenge to the European Union and its Green Deal, its ability to, you know, dominate those manufacturing spaces in plastic recycling, mechanical, chemical recycling, and electric vehicles. China could come to dominate those industries in terms of the technologies through really strong state support. And it also fulfills a pledge to its own people to clean up the environment, which is really important for the Chinese Communist Party. That, you know, they said they're going to clean up the environment, they have to do it. In terms of petchem self-sufficiency, well, they're building a lot of refineries, and a lot of refineries are focused on petrochemicals. So there's nothing surprising about this, Will. You know, they said they were going to do it in 2014. And I wrote about it on the blog, and people are really surprised now that China is moving towards petchem self-sufficiency. Why? Look at the plan. China does what it says it's going to do. And it's reached this point now where it can be self-sufficient in polypropylene in a few couple of years. Paraxylene the same, styrene the same. P and MEG will take a bit longer, but certainly get there. And then the third thing you talked about, the Belt and Road, is creating this zone of influence as we move towards a bipolar world. So as I said, bringing in countries that support the green agenda is one thing, but China will be taking all the hydrocarbons at low cost from, say, the Middle East to be part of the Belt and Road Initiative. They're taking in the petrochemicals where it can't build its own petrochemicals. They'll be exporting finished and semi-finished goods. It'll be moving factories overseas to countries with youth, more youthful populations, therefore lower labour costs. Be importing lots of safe food because of its environmental problems. And lots of money will be flowing overseas in terms of investment in bridges, roads, infrastructure as part of the Belt and Road. And don't underestimate what China's going to do in terms of vaccines. It's donated about $1.8 billion to this COVAX, United Nations scheme, for providing cheap vaccines for the developing world. It's talking about providing vaccines for Malaysia and Indonesia. It's through the pandemic first. It's in a strong position to help the rest of the world, or its friends anyway, recover from the pandemic. So all this be part of this strategy. Because it's facing this hostile environment in terms of the US. So, and the fourth thing, Will, sorry, is economics, because it has to really improve its self-sufficiency in terms of technology in things like semiconductors, where it's very vulnerable to US action in terms of controlling access to technology. It really has to improve its self-sufficiency in high-tech industries. And at the same time, also, it's going to try and boost domestic spending as a proportion of the economy, because actually, surprisingly, despite all the tremendous growth we talk about in China, domestic consumption is a low part of the economy. It's very export dependent. So that requires quite considerable transfer of wealth from the big state-owned companies to the smaller companies. You need to deal with regional inequality in terms of the fact that the inland provinces are a lot poorer than the coastal provinces. And it's got to deal with the challenge of an aging population as well, which is a drain on growth. So that's a huge amount of stuff to do, which is why this fifth plenum is so important. It's not just about the next 5 years, as you said, it's about the next 15 years. It's not just the next five-year plan, it's out to 2035.
Yeah, we've touched on the US, but you said recently you think this fifth plenum could be as important as the US election. Why is that?
Well, in petrochemical terms, there's no contest. Well, if you look at polyethylene, in 2000, polyethylene consumption in China was 12% of the global total. This year, it's about 35%. You know, overtook the US in 2008, or rather North America, to become the biggest consumption region in the world. And the gap has widened and widened. If you look at all our data, it shows that Asia Pacific is miles behind, including India, the Indian subcontinent, Southeast Asia, massively behind China. So obviously anything that happens in China in terms of the strength of its future petchem growth, the strength of its self-sufficiency, is really absolutely core for the petchem business. And I would say more important than what happens in the US presidential election.
Paul, how significant do you think the fifth plenum could be for chemicals?
Well, I think that we get to a point, I think, in both the West and the East, where things are changing, and they've been changing for quite some time. And then symbolically, something comes along and that fixes in your memory as being that was crucial. So the US, obviously crucial election in a few days' time, obviously in Shenzhen. I mean, Shenzhen, it's really interesting. Just if we look at Shenzhen for a moment before the fifth plenum, because when I first went to Hong Kong, couldn't get into China in those days, 1987, I met President Xi Jinping's father, who was the man who actually built up Shenzhen from being a sleepy fishing village under Deng Xiaoping. So when I met him in 1987, he'd been there about 10 years, and he built 10 cities the size of Hong Kong in 10 years. So this was the first fruits of Deng Xiaoping's reform and opening up process. And so it's noteworthy that his son, now the president, went to Shenzhen last week to inaugurate this run-up to the fifth plenum, as John was talking about there. And so it's going to become, again, the focus of economic reform. It's also going to become the focus of technological reform, because Shenzhen is where Huawei is, for example. So we're seeing a really major change. And let's not forget the demographics here for a moment, that over the next 10 years, China is going to lose 100 million people from the wealth creator 25 to 54 age group. So, you know, very significant in terms of its domestic demand. That number is going to go down. And at the same time, its number of perennials over the age of 55 is going to go up by 200 million. So you're going 200 million into the perennials, which is a replacement society, and you're losing 100 million in the wealth creators. So China's domestic patterns are going to completely change. And then again, as John pointed out, so rightly, by 2023, China will have built another 9 million tons of polyethylene capacity. But what does that mean? If you put that together with the demographics, in the next couple of years, I'm quite comfortable with saying China's polyethylene imports will halve. Now, what does that do to all those US expansions? Did anybody think about this? No, they didn't. They were focused on cost curves, and they've forgotten that the critical thing is not cost curves, it's political and social developments. And that was how it always was. And if you get focused on cost curves, I'm afraid you end up with expensive white elephants, which is where those US plants are going to end up.
Just talking about the US, you know, we've got the election coming up next week. If Biden wins, there'll be a change of government in the US. And I wonder if that's what impact that could have on the relationship between the US and China, And, you know, this idea of the development of two big trading zones, well, if there's less conflict between the US and China, will that still happen? What do you think, Paul?
I think that a Biden win, which I think is highly likely, although I do fear that there may be all sorts of fun and games after it. I don't think that President Trump will go easily, because at best he's going to end up in court for the rest of his life, and at worst, if the charge is approved, he'll end up in jail. So I do think this is a very dangerous period that we're coming into, this 11 weeks between the election and inauguration, but we can talk about that another time. I think that the Biden policy will undoubtedly go back into doing the nuclear deal with Iran. It will undoubtedly change policy with Venezuela. And we're already seeing Libya now, by the end of next month, going back up to 1 million barrels a day. So OPEC plus and high oil prices will be under great pressure. I think that's one thing. Secondly, I think that the US has realized now that it's fallen well behind on the green agenda, and that the green agenda is absolutely critical for recovery. And so I think that we will see some massive changes there, and that will boost recycling. I mean, why are we not taking advantage of all the hydrocarbons currently sitting in waste sites? We know where it is, we know the volume, more than enough to cope with. Why are we still drilling down the Permian Basin and anything else? We don't need these fossil fuels anymore. We've already got more than enough if we do proper recycling in our right by the cities where it's needed. So I think there's going to be some major changes here, and I think there will be a rapprochement with China, but I don't think it will go back to the partnership that sustained the global economy for 40 years. I think the tension that President Trump has brought over the last 3 to 4 years has made China very cautious indeed, and made all America's allies very cautious indeed about what the Americans might do next. So I think that will take quite some time for those concerns to start to calm down.
Nigel, why does the industry in Europe need to pay attention to the fifth plenum?
Well, I think not just Europe. Well, I mean, globally, companies need to understand what China is proposing, or what's being proposed for China, for the economy and also politically over the next 5, 10, 15 years. Because, you know, when China decides to do something, it usually does it. And our analysts have been asked for the past 10 months, for instance, what about this 19 million tons of ethylene capacity that is due on stream in China over the next 2 to 3 years? Surely that's not going to happen. Well, China came out of the pandemic very quickly. Companies are paying workers to work very, very long, work long hours, but to put an enormous amount of work into building these facilities, and they will come on stream. You know, there's no doubt about that, I don't think. And this all goes back essentially to when China liberalized the private company access to crude oil imports. That was back in 2015. Also, this big push for integration with downstream producers doing very nicely, thank you, but then wanting to get involved in the upstream business, so pushing back into ethylene. And this is happening all over. And as I said, it's tied in very, very closely with what China intends to do. So as we've been saying on this podcast, in terms of recycling, in terms of greater energy efficiency, in terms of electrification, these measures will have a huge impact on China's ability to produce petrochemicals, its increasing self-sufficiency. And by the same token, will then have a knock-on impact on the export opportunities that countries in Europe have enjoyed. Not just upstream, of course. I mean, I'm talking more now about downstream industries. But you know, those export opportunities will diminish over the coming years.
Thanks, Nigel. John, I wonder if we could just have a quick review now of the 2015 to 2020 plan, which is coming to an end. Highlights for me were like the huge growth in petrochemicals capacity, the banning of waste plastic imports, and the crackdown on polluting industries, and its recovery from the COVID crisis seems to be pretty impressive. What were the highlights for you, John, of the existing five-year plan?
Well, as Nigel's highlighted, it's moving towards petrochemical self-sufficiency. They said they're going to do it and they've done it. So nobody should be surprised about this at all. I mean, what's a great achievement as well is cleaning up the air quality improvements are enormous. I mean, one of the things they did, and this is amazing in China, they said, right, we're going to close all the small dirty polluters down, move them from next to the cities, the urban areas, because of course these plants weren't in urban areas before, because the urban areas have expanded into the countryside with urbanization. Move all these small, highly, either close them down and move them to chemical industry parks, or, you know, scrap them completely, scrap five plants, build two world-scale plants in these big integrated chemical industry parks. That's what they said they were going to do as part of this plan. And they'll rationalize lots of smaller chemical plants, build big new world-scale chemical plants. And it's the scale of it, Will, is quite staggering. Thousands and thousands of chemical plants have been shut down over the last few years and relocated to these dedicated, highly integrated, very sophisticated coastal chemical sites integrated with refineries. And this is not just the big bulk petrochemicals, some of them are smaller chemicals as well, and your pesticides, your agrochemicals, all move to these big integrated sites. So that's a huge achievement. That's helped to clean up the environment. So I think the two things are we've become much more self-sufficient and they've cleaned up the environment. So those are two major achievements. The pandemic shows the benefits of, you know, central control and being organized. Once they recognized there was a problem, which maybe took a little bit too long, they dealt with it extremely efficiently. They got it done. Obviously that wasn't in the plan, but they had plans for an event like this. They experienced SARS, they prepared for it, they got the PPE ready, they knew what to do. You know, and so they got on with it and very, very successful.
And the Belt and Road Initiative has really taken off in the last 5 years. Paul, Nigel, any comments on the Belt and Road Initiative and how successful it's been so far?
Well, I think the view that we've always taken on these podcasts is that this is China's way of coping with the demographic deficit that it's starting to develop quite strongly, as I said. You know, if you lose 100 million wealth creators and you gain 200 million millennials, you'd better find some younger population from somewhere to look after your older people, because it's difficult to do that on your domestic population. And so that's really the source, the driver of the Belt and Road Initiative. And it's going very well. People, you know, as always, people don't understand that China does big projects. That's what, you know, the Chinese Communist Party does. So when it does the five-year plan, and when it looks out now to 2035, this isn't just something for politics and an election broadcast and then it gets forgotten. This is what it actually goes and does. And so this is going to be, I think, a very major development, because we're now, a lot of the infrastructure is now in place, you know, high-speed railways going down to Singapore and so on in place. So the next stage of this will be the build out of factories and of wealth creating activities like that.
John, Paul and Nigel, thanks very much for joining me this week. If you'd like to learn more about the services and products that we have on offer, visit icis.com.